What you're about to hear was aired on Planet Philadelphia, environmental radio show on Germantown Community Radio, 92.9 FM, WGGTLP in Philadelphia, and on gtownradio.com. We're on a call with Deborah Ehrenberg. We're going to be talking about something called a cancer-free economy. But before we get into what all that means, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Thank you very much for having me today. I am the strategic director for the Cancer Free Economy Network. We're a national network of more than 60 member organizations and individuals who have come together to create a society where the places that we live, learn, work, and play don't make anybody sick or give us cancer. And I've had the privilege of being the strategic director for this network for a little over 5 years now. My background is in a variety of advocacy roles around human rights, the environment, social justice issues. So I'm not a health or medical professional myself, although we have quite a few health and science experts within the network.
So what do you mean by a cancer-free economy?
Sure. And I think it's actually helpful to maybe start by thinking about the cancer-full economy that we have right now. Many of us think that all chemicals are tested before they get put on the market. And that's not true. In fact, most are never tested for safety. Many of us think that when we do find out a chemical is a carcinogen, that it would be regulated. And again, that's also not true. And then we also think that if there are regulations, they would be very strictly enforced. And unfortunately, that is also not always true. So we're left with a society in the United States where half of all men and one in three women will be diagnosed with cancer at some time during their lifetime. And since 1975, we've seen cancers in children climbing by 41%. So this is a real crisis within our society. And we know that this crisis isn't affecting everybody equally. The places that you live, the jobs that you do, definitely increase the odds of your developing cancer at some point in your life. So a cancer-free economy, we're working for a society where companies have to take responsibility for the chemicals that they're using, that we start with the precautionary principle that says we're only going to use things if we know that they're safe, and we work from there. So we want to make a society where our homes are safe, where our schools are safe, our jobs are safe, and where the place that you live doesn't impact the question of whether or not you'll develop cancer or other diseases later on in your lifetime.
So one of the factors making cancer risks worse is all these chemicals that we're using more and more, for instance, in plastics and so forth. Are there other factors making it worse that are interacting with things, perhaps?
Yeah, there's definitely a growing consensus among scientists that there are multiple factors that are interacting with each other to determine people's cancer risk. So we know that by our genetics, some people are more inclined to develop cancer than others. And unfortunately, at present, there's nothing you can do to change the genes that you were born with. We know that individual lifestyle factors can also play a role in your risk, obesity, smoking, things like that. And the other factor that interacts with those factors then is the environment and the chemicals that you're exposed to. And there's a belief that if you were not exposed to those chemicals, many people, despite having genetic risk factors, would likely go their entire lifetimes without developing cancer. But the exposure to the toxic chemical has activated something that you may have been predisposed to in the past. many cancer organizations, when they talk about cancer, you know, they talk about your genetic risk factors. And when they talk about cancer prevention, they really focus almost exclusively on individual lifestyle. You know, they want me to stop smoking, exercise more, don't overeat or eat fatty foods. And all of that is good advice for us as individuals. But, you know, Cancer Free Economy Network is recognizing that there are a number of factors that we can take control of as a society that individuals alone may not have the power to control. But when we come together across different sectors of work, across different communities, we can reduce everybody's risk for developing cancer.
It would seem to me that maybe climate and the environment in other ways also makes cancer risks worse. Just as one example, the ozone layer, you know, is increasing the risk of melanoma, and hotter climates may worsen the pollution in the air. So is that the way you'd see it, that climate change and other environmental factors also are contributing?
Absolutely. And also a lot of the same root causes that are driving climate change are driving the increase of cancer in our society. You know, the fossil fuel infrastructure that is causing air pollution and asthma is also causing more cancers down the line. As we're seeing increased weather disasters and rising tides, we're also seeing a number of chemical production and storage facilities that are at ever greater risk of having some sort of a catastrophic breach and exposing communities to massive levels of toxic chemicals.
Since the train derailment in East Palestine, there's been a lot more reporting on chemical accidents, and apparently they happen almost every day somewhere in the U.S. So that's not even including the climate and weather disasters that may cause a release. So it seems like there are a lot of interlocking factors that are making our situation worse.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, one of the issues is you may not have any idea what toxic chemicals are currently located in your community, or maybe traveling through your community at any given time. It can be very difficult to find out, and it can be extremely difficult to find out what risks those may pose for you and your health.
There must be a lot of factors why that is. I mean, there must be economic drivers. There must be, I don't know, possibly just inertia because it was the way we've always done things. So do you have some ideas on that?
Yeah, I would say economic factors are a huge driver in this. There's very little disincentive for a company to use an untested or even a chemical that is believed to cause cancer or other diseases in their products. If it's cheaper for them to go ahead and use a chemical that they are familiar with and they don't anticipate that the legal liability would, you know, outweigh the cost of developing it, there seems to be very little problem with going ahead and putting that on the market without concern for not only the health of your customers, but even more so the health of your workers who are being exposed to higher levels of these chemicals on a daily basis, and the communities where your factories are based, where, you know, for example, in North Carolina, where we're seeing water supplies impacted by PFAS, which were called forever chemicals, into the water from companies that are causing that pollution. You know, we really have very little government oversight and enforcement given just the magnitude of this problem and the sheer number of companies across the country that are causing various kinds of pollution.
There's something called the social cost of carbon. It would seem to me, given the economic drivers, is there something like the social cost of cancer? How would that be figured into the economy? What would that change, do you think?
It's a great question. And we don't currently have the figures for what that social cost would be, but absolutely, we're seeing a huge social cost from cancer and from the toxic chemicals that are driving cancer. We've been quite fortunate. We've made a massive investment in cancer treatments, and that has really led the rate of cancer deaths to decline. But at the same time that there are fewer people dying from cancer, there's more people who are developing cancer. And we know that the economic costs of that in terms of both lost wages as well as medical treatments and care are significant. There's also huge, of course, emotional and social costs for every family that has experienced this. I like the connection that you're talking about between fossil fuels and climate and cancer and toxic chemicals, because one of the biggest drivers of use of petroleum and fossil fuels right now, where we're expecting to see the most growth in our economy, is from petrochemicals. So things like plastics and other uses of petroleum and fossil fuel-based products in chemicals. So we've done great work in helping people to think about, what is the carbon footprint of various choices that we make in our society. But what we're saying is it's not just the carbon footprint we need to think about, it's also the chemical footprint. And what does that look like at the same time?
I know your network is funding various projects. Could you give us examples of some of those projects, what they're doing, and do you have any outcome measures about how they are working?
So we've come to recognize that within the scientific and health professions, the idea that environmental drivers can cause cancers is not always fully respected or accepted. And so one of the very early goals of our network was to organize health and science professionals to really help to make the scientific case for this. And through quite a bit of conversations across professions, we were able to work with the American Association of Cancer Researchers to have their first ever meeting specifically around environmental causes of cancer. And at that meeting, we also provided funding so that people from environmentally impacted communities could travel to those meetings and tell their stories. And it was really the first time that many of these cancer researchers had ever met or heard from anybody in a community that's experiencing health issues due to environmental contaminants. And that meeting was followed up with a standalone journal that went out to their membership with articles on this topic, and have really helped kind of lead a ripple effect to increase knowledge, understanding, and acceptance about the connection between the environment and cancer. And so through that meeting, we were able to build connections with major cancer centers, such as the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, to offer webinars and seminars on cancer and the environment to the doctors and professionals within their networks. So building that professional understanding of the connection between cancers and the environment provides a really strong underpinning for further work and policy development. Now, President Biden just relaunched the Cancer Moonshot Initiative. He's talking about eliminating cancer as we know it and reducing cancer deaths by half. You know, these are all really important goals. And our network has been there to say, we're not going to complete the mission unless we include a focus on cancer prevention in the first place. And through our earlier work and outreach efforts, you know, we've been able to participate in a variety of panels and conversations around making sure that the cancer moonshot really does address the issue of preventing people from getting cancer in the first place.
You said that changing things to prevent cancer in the first place. I was wondering, how would they do that? Would it be legislation so that regulators have to consider the cancer risk before they approve something? I mean, is that what you're looking for, that sort of thing?
Yeah, regulation is definitely part of it, as well as working within companies to change their practices. You know, our network includes a number of green businesses that have chosen to be kind of best in class and really show that it's possible to make a variety of products without toxic chemicals, and that consumers embrace that and prefer that in many cases.
Give us some examples of that, and how I know one of the things that you also wanted is that for companies to take responsibility, that might be economic responsibility or reparative responsibility. I'm not sure what you had in mind.
Yeah, we support all of those varieties of responsibility that you've mentioned. So, you know, we believe that corporations should be developing products that have been tested for safety before being released on our society as a whole. We believe that companies should be responsible for the cost of cleanup if they have polluted a community or a water supply. We believe that companies should be responsible for the health and safety of their workers.
This is a laudable goal, but you go to a company and present this. How are you going to actually get them to change their behaviors if there isn't an economic driver for them to do better? I'm not sure what levers we have to get them to change their behaviors.
There are a number of levers. And I think one of the things that we're working towards is trying to make those levers stronger, because right now they're generally not strong enough to keep most companies from using toxic chemicals. So we can look at, for example, Monsanto and Roundup, where there have been a series of court cases finding liability for causing cancer, particularly involving groundskeepers. And the more that those cases are brought, are upheld, they continue to build on each other and increase the weight on that lever against using these toxic chemicals. But when we're talking about such a widely used and economically profitable product, it will take quite a lot. And our preference is to build policies so that we don't have to see growing numbers of people who are suffering from advanced cancer having to bear the burden of all of these lawsuits, but rather, for example, we have a network member called Rewild Your Campus that is working with groundskeepers at universities in different parts of the country to advocate for more organic weed control methods so that the groundskeepers and the students on those campuses aren't exposed to toxic chemicals. We have members working for similar policies around other schools and playgrounds where younger children gather. And we also have communities that are working for similar policies. So, you know, that's just one example of ways that communities and other groups can kind of get together to reduce their risk and also increase the incentives for the companies to provide something safer. And I'll say that this is happening simultaneously with efforts to persuade shareholders at those companies that it's not a good risk or investment to be investing in a company that is facing such significant legal liability, particularly in a changing regulatory environment.
Another thing you sort of alluded to earlier is transparency, that we don't know what's in our neighborhoods, and that would seem to be another solution that you would like pursued. Would that be correct?
And what absolutely. Kind of- right now, many companies hide behind proprietary information to avoid revealing the information about what chemicals go into the products that they are selling to consumers or that are being released as a byproduct of their production process. And our position is that consumers should have a right to know what potentially harmful chemicals are being used in the production process and in the end products that they're consuming.
Is this something that this idea of changing our economy to lower cancer risk recognized or even worked on at state, national, or international levels? And to what degree do you see that?
I would say that the concept of connecting cancer with the economy isn't spoken about as directly in other forums. But at the international level, the European Union in particular, I feel, is further along than the United States in terms of recognizing toxic chemicals and taking action to remove them from products and keep them away from consumers. At the federal level, with the Biden administration, we've seen a really increased level of interest, in particular on environmental justice, and looking at ways to support many environmental justice communities, so communities of color, lower income communities. Usually, those communities aren't impacted by just a single source of pollution, but they're struggling from cumulative impacts of a variety of toxic chemicals coming in the form of air pollution, products within their homes, water pollution. And all of these factors make it very difficult to say that a single polluter is responsible for people's health, but each one of them adds to the risk and the cancer burden of that community. And so we're just seeing the administration starting to take steps to help support communities in being able to identify and take action around risks that they're facing. And this is something that a number of our network members have actually been working on for quite some time in terms of community-led science and getting air monitors, for example, in the hands of community members so that they know what they're breathing, and also so that they can test, like, oh, there's some certain times of day or certain times when the wind is going in a certain direction that I know that the air is particularly bad and I need to make sure to close the windows in my home and maybe not even let my kids play outside during those hours. But there are other times of day or times when the wind is going a different direction that it may be less risky. And, you know, having information like this, you know, on the one hand, you know, we think in the United States, people shouldn't have to be scientists and take into their own hands trying to understand whether or not the air is safe to breathe or their kids can be safe playing outside. But on the other hand, having those tools at least gives people the information they need to start to protect themselves and to document issues within their community so that they can take action together.
Your organization has a lot of information people might want to read. So how would they do that?
Our website is cancerfreeeconomy.org. And there's a link at the top of the website to resources, as well as a link to a document where we've compiled a number of really helpful resources from a variety of our network members about everything from shopping to household cleaning to products that you may want to purchase that are safer for your home.
This has been great. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Deborah.
If you want to know more about Planet Philadelphia, go to planetphiladelphia.com. You could also find out more about other G-Town Radio programming by going to gtownradio.com. I hope you will consider making a small monthly donation to help Planet Philadelphia continue presenting interviews on important underreported environmental topics and exploring their complexities and intersections. Thank you so much for your support.